I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's weird medicine, or in Swahili, majabu ya dawa. I'm Dr. Steve, doctor to the stars with my little pal P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of radio. In the studio tonight is double vasectomy Todd, a man so full of testosterone, one vasectomy wasn't good enough. He's sitting in for JJ, the man who cannot be named, and actually I'm going to name him. His name is Jefferson, and he was supposed to be here today, and he decided going to Atlanta with his wife was more important. So there you go.
Or that bastard.
If you never heard us before, this is a show for people who would normally hate listening to a medical show on the radio, and we try to deal with medical problems honestly and with plain language and with no limitations regarding the content. If you have a medical question, you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider. Give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com, or better yet, visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net, or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TOOTIE. Please remember, we're not your healthcare providers. Check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse, practitioner, acupuncturist, or whatever. Tonight we also have our studio audience. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Never gets old.
Very shy studio audience.
John has dubbed them the inpatients, while I prefer to call them sad bastards with pathetic lives. I can see Susie, and I can see Rob from Elizabethton. Good to have you guys here. Tonight we're going to start with the we were going to start with the radio debut of my wife Tacy, who is known to Ron and Fez fans as Tacy, Dr. Steve's anti-Semitic wife. But she decided that for reasons that will be made clear later, that she's not going to break her radio silence. She's never been on the air. And there's reasons for that. And number one, Ronnie Bennington does such a good impression of her that she doesn't need to get on the air. So, but I just wanted to play the audio from the Ron and Fez show, and we'll discuss it a little bit. Then, of course, we'll answer some hairy ass crack questions and nuts and that kind of stuff. So here it is.
I went down to South Carolina,
Cacalona,
where I met Dr. Steve, and Jesus, the Italian restaurant he took us to.
I'm still laughing that you got taken for Italian food when you were in the South. Why didn't they take you for Southern food or fried chicken? Why take you for something that's amazing in New York?
Now, that is a great question.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave could have defended us a little bit on this one. This is what happened. They were coming back from their trip down South. And when they come back from there, they drive right past our house. I mean, we're a mile off the interstate. And I said, drop by and we'll buy you guys lunch. So we went to and they didn't have a lot of time. You know, they were driving, had to get back. And so we decided, I said, there's two places off the interstate. There's Perkins and there's this little Italian place. And he said, well, let's go to the Italian place. And you know, on top of that, we paid for his lunch.
Right. And you don't want to buy him Southern food at Perkins.
No, absolutely not. We would want to take him someplace great. So someday we will, assuming, you know, we can remain friends after all this, we will take them somewhere nice. But this was just a quickie one-off. And you know what cracks me up is we walked out of this place. Now, this restaurant is the people who run it are from Italy. I mean, they can't even speak English.
Wow.
And I don't know how you can get more authentic than that. So I think this myth that only New York City has.
You could turn it into American food.
Yeah.
That would be more authentic Italian, right?
Right, 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 exactly. But anyway, so When they walked out, this is what Dave said. Oh, look over there. There's a Jersey Mike's. We should have gone there. So, okay.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, give me a break. Anyway, here we go.
This is a really good point. They're like, you got to try some of our Italian food. It's Dr. Steve's wife.
I guess. She's,
this is what she said to me. Ever since we were in New York, I saw six Jews.
Why does she keep track so tightly?
And one of the Jews was carrying a handbag and had high heel shoes on.
I guess he took us to...
And then later, I saw two Ricans, Dominican, and three coloreds. Oh, they were all sitting down. They were just as nice as a regular person.
I almost had to punch their little son in the face. He was grabbing Juliana by the head. He
thought, okay, wait a minute. We'll get to that part because this is where it gets ugly.
This is where it gets ugly.
Well, the whole thing, I need to break the fourth wall a little bit and tell the story about how Tacy became Dr. Steve's anti-Semitic wife, okay? So the first time we went to New York and did the first Weird Medicine, we met Ron and Fez at Comics Comedy Club that Friday afternoon because they were doing Robert Klein.
Right.
And so we went to Unmasked.
Right.
And saw Robert Klein. It was awesome. And then that night we went to Bar 9. And so we met everybody and had a great time. And it really, there are no nicer bunch of people than Ron and Fez fans, and especially the people that we met in New York. I mean, and New York is the most amazing place in the world. I don't even have to say that. Everybody knows it. So but we're standing outside Bar 9, and Ronnie was smoking a cigar, and it was getting a little chilly, and we're all standing outside. And Ron just turns to Tacy and goes, okay, blacks, gays, or Jews, which is it? And she looks at him and goes, what? And he goes, okay, it's not gays, so blacks or Jews. And she goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And he says, okay, it's Jews. Hey, look, there's a Jew. Come here, Jew. She's never seen a Jew before. They don't have Jews where she comes from. And from then on, she was without saying a word.
Wow.
And when we were at Opie's wedding, we were riding in this limo, with this big white limo that Ronnie's chick had rented, and it was just kind of a goof. And we're riding around in this thing after the wedding, and Ron said, "You just wait till I start talking about you talking to Tacy on Monday." And she said, "I didn't say anything." And he said, "It doesn't matter." And, and the whole reason I have to explain this is because later on, Happy Typing Girl sounds like she's actually buying this stuff. So I just, I really like Debbie, and I just want her to know that she doesn't have to worry about Tacy. Anyway, let's go back to this. I'm going to back it up just a little bit.
They were all sitting down. They were just as nice as a regular person.
I almost had to punch their little son in the face. He was grabbing Juliana by the head. He thought he could pet her like a dog, but he was like shaking her head around like that.
Oh, he just loves her. He's giving her sugar.
That's what she was saying, actually. She's like, he loves babies.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's going to break my baby's neck.
And she said this about, and this is Tacy, of course. She said this about the boy. She goes like this. Oh, he's a little devil. He's got the Jew in him. I go, what does that mean? You know, Jew, devil. I go, I never knew that. They say when a kid's bad, they got the Jew in them.
Is that real?
Yes.
No, it's not
at all.
And he's so good at it. Even Happy Typing Girl, who's been around them a lot longer than we have and knows their M.O., is still going, is that for real? They really say that? So I played this for Liam, and Tacy had kind of gotten her hackles up because you can say anything you want to about her, she's fine. But you start talking about her kids and the redneck in her comes out. But then I played it for Liam, and he just had a few words for his Uncle Dave, and so I just thought I'd play that, and that will be the end of it. So what do you think about Uncle Dave saying that about you?
He is a stupid head. He is a stupid head.
He is? What else do you have to say to Uncle Dave?
And he does not have a sense of humor.
Really?
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of people listening to the show that comes on after us that would agree with you on that.
Okay.
What else do you think about Uncle Dave?
He cannot think of what he's doing.
He can't think of what he's doing?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means He does not have a brain.
Really? You got all of that from just that short visit with Uncle Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Liam, thank you for being with us today.
Okay.
All right, give me five, Blue. Out of the mouth of babes.
Amen. Amen.
There you go, Dave, faced by a five-year-old. And he loved that little girl. He said, I want to marry Juliana someday. So
oh, that's
you know, he
sweet.
Was just patting her on the head. I don't remember him wanking her head around.
Wow.
So.
Liam's the sweetest kid in the world.
So, well, you're listening to Weird Medicine. Give us an email at drsteve202@gmail.com or visit our website at drsteve.com. You can spell that any way you want. And or you can leave a voicemail message at 423-343-8884, 343-8884. Now, we have a new schedule. If you're listening to us now, we're on at 5 o'clock on Saturday, which, like we said last time, maybe they're moving us back farther and farther until eventually we're on prime time.
That's right. Good.
But we're just, believe me, we're just happy to make the cut.
Right.
And happy to be here. We have a lot of listeners, and we've actually done some good on this show, and some, you know, it's entertaining from time to time. So I think we're very happy to be here. And the good side of this is we're going to be on twice as often now. We're going to share this slot with Big Kev's Geek Stuff, mm-hmm. a show that I listen to on a regular basis because he keeps me up on all the crazy geek stuff that I like. I mean, I collect stuff.
You collect dolls.
You know, I started to say all the things that I collect, and then there was something in my brain said, just don't go there.
Yeah,
but anyway,
it's called good sense.
Let's just say that I'm one of his target demographics. But we enjoy that show. We're glad to be on in the same time slot as them. And we will be on twice as often, and there may be a couple of surprises in the future where we may be able to do some more live shows more frequently than before, because as we know, the live show is where it's at.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're working on a really, really cool idea where we could do more live shows. So I'd love to have this be a regular gig, but right now it's just a really fun hobby, and we really enjoy it. So we have with us in the studio Double Vasectomy Todd, and I've gotten a couple of emails. Why do you call him Double Vasectomy Todd? And you actually had two vasectomies.
That's right. That's right.
Just give us the Reader's Digest version of that story.
Well, the moral of the story is you can't keep a good man down. my wife and I had two children, decided we didn't want three children, and so I opted for a vasectomy, went in, had the procedure done. About a month later or so, maybe 6 weeks at the most, I notice I'm getting this big, gnarly-looking, about the size of a shooter marble, yeah. coming up on the right side of my nutsack. Basically looks like a third nut.
Yeah.
So, and some of you will remember I called the first Weird Medicine Show.
You were about our third or fourth caller, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. So it turned out that the vasectomy was trying to grow back together, and apparently it does happen occasionally.
Yeah.
So went back in, snip, snip. It was a lot more invasive the second time. They had to put me to sleep and actually cut it open and go in and take a larger chunk out so it wouldn't do it again. But even going through all that, I would still recommend a vasectomy over, say, having your wife's tubes tied or something.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot less invasive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even mine was, even what I did was less invasive than what she would have had to do.
Yeah, I mean, our tubes are right there at the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right. When you had your vasectomy, did they dry shave your nuts like they did mine?
No, because I was smart enough to wet shave mine before I went in.
They didn't tell me to do that. I just showed up, and the guy puts me in the stirrups like I'm having a pap smear, and then takes out a pink daisy razor and starts dry shaving my nuts.
Oh,
scritch, 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 all the whole time talking to me like, oh, well, we went to Cafe Pacific last week, and how'd you like it? And I'm just grabbing the side of the table going, oh, my God.
And that sounds way worse than the procedure.
Yeah, it was.
Because, I went in, he told me, if you don't want me to do it, you need to do it.
Yeah.
So I did it, and bim, bam, boom, no problem.
I received no such instruction from my vasectomist.
But didn't you used to perform vasectomies?
Yeah.
So maybe you would have known.
I was stupid. And, that's a good point. actually. Why didn't I, you know, I don't know. When it's your own nuts getting worked on, your brain doesn't work the same way. I'm different when I'm in patient mode than doctor mode. So.
I want to think that mine would work twice as good.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
you're taking a scalpel and putting it where
you want to think that, but you're probably wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do vasectomies as a routine part of my practice. I mean, the ones that I did were in training, so maybe I can plead ignorance from that because I wasn't part of the preoperative of routine. So
right,
but
right.
Anyway, we have a project with Weird Medicine, and we have two friends of the show that are having some medical problems that we would like to help with. Now, we can't help everybody, and more and more I'm thinking with all the people that email us that say, I've got this major problem, but I can't get in to see anybody because I don't have health insurance. I mean, it's a majority of people that are emailing us. Two of the ONA XM202 Sirius 197 friends are Big A and Pat Fumunaki.
Right.
And I just talked to Pat Fumunaki recently, and because of his financial situation right now, he has not had his diabetes medication for about 9 months. And his blood sugars are averaging around 300. And also, Big A, I made him a doctor's appointment, and they said that they took his insurance. And, of course, when he got there, they did everything and then told him that they didn't take his insurance.
So he
got stuck with a big bill, and he needs some stuff, too. And so what I thought we would do, and I don't even know the legalities of this. I'm sure it's legal. I know it's not tax deductible, so I'll just say that up front. But we're going to create a PayPal account. And we'll advertise this through Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, and we'll also put it on the message boards where you can donate some money to help these guys out. And what we'll do is when they get a bill, they'll just submit it to us, and whatever's in the account we'll pay out as much as we can. Won't be able to do this forever. What I'm hoping is eventually that some kind of universal health care, I mean something, so that everybody in this country can get some kind of health care. Because there's just, these two guys, I did a rectal on Big A on Opie and Anthony's show, and we became friends after that. That's a weird way to meet someone, to be friends with them. But and then Pat Fumunaki was on our third live show, and they're just both they're wonderful people, just the nicest guys in the world, and this is just an unacceptable situation.
Sure is.
So the PayPal account will be drsteve202@gmail.com, and I don't have it set up yet. If you want to go to it and see if you can donate under that account, I'm hoping by the time this airs that it'll all be set up. But if not, I'll put out the word through ONA and Ron and Fez. Okay? So
unless somebody just set up that account.
Well,
No.
But, dude, we're not live.
That's what I just remembered. It took 2 seconds for it to hit. Come
I'm out. Stupid because I didn't shave my knots.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Let's do a little medical news. I think some people have heard about this. This is from Health Day News, that smoking marijuana over an extended period of time appears to greatly boost a young man's risk for developing a particularly aggressive form of testicular cancer. And these researchers found that men who smoked marijuana once a week or began to use the substance on a long-term basis while they were adolescents incurred double the risk for developing the fastest-spreading version of testicular cancer, which is called non-seminoma, which accounts for about 40% of all cases. There wasn't any link between it and the other kind, which is called seminoma. They published this in February 9th, online issue of Cancer, so you can look it up. Testicular cancer is very rare. It accounts for just 1% of cancers among American men, but it's the most common type of cancer for American men between the ages of 15 and 34. Now, it's weird because testicular cancer is felt to be something that begins in the womb, an error in the cells when they're first created, because you are born with, the with these testicles, and the testicular tissue is basically set from the beginning. Now, they don't mm-hmm. start producing sperm until you get that testosterone burst mm-hmm. when you're in puberty. But though, you know, these aren't sperm cell cancers, they're germ cell cancers. So most testicular cancer is thought to begin in the womb, and it catches fire when puberty occurs. So when you throw testosterone on it, that's when you start having problems. So, you know, it's hard to understand how exposure could cause it.
Right, or exacerbate it.
Right, but it may increase the growth, but it's most likely not a direct cause. Mm-hmm. So more research is required. But, you know, if you're an adolescent you shouldn't be smoking pot anyway.
That's
right. You know, I'm not a prude, but, I mean, come on. When you're under 18, it's silly to be getting high. But for young men, there may be some increase. Now, if you're talking about going from 1% to 1.7%, it's still a very low number. But, you know, this is not something you want to increase your risk on.
Right.
We've instructed people how to examine their nuts on this show on multiple occasions, and we won't go through it again. But let's just say this, that if you feel your nuts every month and you feel something there that you've not noticed before, if it feels rocky, or there feels like there's something stuck to your testicle that wasn't there previously, then go see your healthcare provider and let them check it out.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And if you're not feeling your nuts any more than once a month, you need to stop smoking pot and start feeling your nuts more
often. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So anyway. All right. We got Rob from Elizabeth. Now, Rob, you are diabetic.
Yeah.
And you wear the pump. Mm-hmm. You and P.A. John are blood brothers in that regard. I probably need you to get closer to that.
We're actually called pumpers.
Pumper, is that right?
Is that the term?
Is that the term in the diabetes community?
Yeah.
Okay.
And has it been through the euphemism treadmill?
Yeah, it hasn't. It will be, though.
It will be now, because I don't want to be called a pumper. I don't know about you.
Bunch of pumpers. Anyway.
I'd rather be called a pumper than dead.
Yeah, well, no kidding.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, the cool thing is that John is a testament to, and Rob, too, is testament to the improved treatment of type 1 diabetes, you know, the insulin-dependent type.
Right.
Because John was diagnosed at 1 year of age, and 50 years ago, he would have had a very poor long-term prognosis, you know, mm-hmm. but as it is, you're doing great. I mean,
I've been through all kinds of different medical devices and things, and I don't know. It's just amazing now that the insulin pump exists, and yep.
We need an artificial pancreas, though. That's what's got to come next is a device that checks your blood sugar for you and then gives out insulin
That's what this is working towards. Actually, they already have a sensor that you can right now. I guess real quick, I'll explain that just so you know.
Yeah.
It's the insulin pump is you insert the device under your skin subcutaneously, and the pump delivers insulin when you want it to and on a regular basis. And then they also have one that you insert and it registers your blood sugar and then sends a signal to the insulin pump to tell it whether it's too high or too low. If it's too low, it stops it from giving it when it's supposed to. And if it's too high, it gives you just a little bit more. So they already have that. They just haven't integrated it.
Yeah.
So right now you have to have yourself stuck in two different places.
Okay. Yeah, but we need an integrated one. And then obviously we just need a cure. There are some people that are working, and stem cells were one of the first things people were looking at to regenerate pancreas tissue. But now they figured out in animal models how to turn regular pancreas cells into insulin producing cells without the use of stem cells. So there may be a cure. You know, it's always 10 years away, 10 years away, 10 years away. I keep hearing this 10 years away. I've been hearing that for 20 years, but I think we are getting closer.
I think Monday they're supposed to overturn the bill on stopping stem cells, so they'll allow it. So now.
And that's great, but so many of these researchers got frustrated that they figured out ways around having to use stem cells because they weren't able to use new stem cell lines.
Right.
And so they figured out some pretty cool stuff. So, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and prohibition made them be a little more, ingenious.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're coming up with some cool stuff that doesn't even require the use of stem cells. So we'll see. I think it's really exciting. But anyway, but Rob, you had a sort of more mundane question about.
Yeah. I've been diabetic 31 years, and Diet Coke is one of the few vices that I can enjoy. But I'm hearing a lot of negative stuff about NutraSweet, neurological damage, stuff like that.
Sure.
Is there any validity to that?
Okay, that's a great question. NutraSweet is really not even related to sugar. It's, and I'll just throw out a chemical thing because I was an organic chemist before. It's a methyl ester of the dipeptide of amino acids, aspartic acid, and phenylalanine. Okay, did you get all that?
Every bit.
Basically, it is an extremely small, if you will, protein. It's two amino acids stuck together, and amino acids are the building blocks of muscle and that kind of stuff. And when you put these two amino acids together, it makes a very sweet substance that's extremely sweet, milligram per milligram, much more so than sugar. It's used in soft drinks and as a table sweetener. It breaks down in heat, so it's not good for baking. And it is losing its market share big time due to sucralose, which is also called Splenda, which is much more sugar-like. It breaks down into its component amino acids, and this is where this myth comes from, including one of the amino acids is phenylalanine. And that is a problem for people who have a disease or a condition called phenylketonuria. Okay, these are people with an inborn inability to break down this amino acid phenylalanine. And then if they eat too much phenylalanine, it can cause neurologic damage and stuff. There was a lot of internet misinformation was based on a single article by this lady, Nancy Markle, which was allegedly based on her talks at the quote-unquote World Environmental Conference. And I thought we could go through some of her claims and then talk about what's wrong with her thinking. She said, with her thinking in this particular matter, not in general necessarily, but maybe in general. I don't know. I don't know her. So. But one of her claims was that aspartame was linked to an epidemic of multiple sclerosis and systemic lupus. And this is just patently not true. In 1999, the senior medical advisor of the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation unequivocally denied any links between multiple sclerosis and aspartame. She also claimed that aspartame intake results in methanol, formaldehyde, and formate production. These are all toxic organic chemicals. And it's true that aspartame degrades in the GI tract to methanol and phenylalanine and aspartic acid. And when they're used by body cells, methanol forms formaldehyde and this other stuff called formic acid, which is the acid that fire ants have.
Oh, okay. Right.
But she neglected to state that the amounts of methanol formed after aspartame ingestion are totally modest, similar to those formed when we eat fruits and vegetables.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes, when you eat fruits and vegetables, these same substances are created in the cells, and the cells are designed to take care of these toxic substances. I mean, it's one of the things that our liver does, and it's part of what the kidney does is to filter out toxic substances. So part of cellular metabolism is to take toxic substances and break them down to things that aren't so toxic. Higher levels of methanol are formed when we consume citrus fruits, juices, tomato juice, and alcohol. So, so get over it. Her claim is true, but the answer is so what?
Yeah. Okay. It was a Bloody Mary is much worse for you.
Yeah, it's not even worse for you. It just makes more of the stuff, but the body can handle it.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah,
right.
You know.
Okay.
Aspartame potentially mediates reproductive effects and is linked to birth defects, and this is not true. Results of experimental studies on animals indicate aspartame does not mess with reproductive effects and birth defects, even at doses many times higher than those in which humans are exposed. And the list just goes on and on. Now, the manufacturers of aspartame convened an expert panel to look at its safety and found that no rigorous studies pointed to an adverse effect from aspartame. Of course, they would say that because it was convened. But what they wanted to do was say, look, we're going to convene this expert panel and so we can set this to rest once and for all. And, of course, that just got the the conspiracy theorists even more wound up because it was paid for by the people that make aspartame. But, you know, they swear that the people on the expert panel didn't know who was hiring them and all this stuff. But, you know, who knows? But the bottom line is, as far as I really looked at this because you're my friend and this is important to me to give you the right answer. And the best I could find is that there is no link to long-term danger with aspartame. But if you're worried about it, get Splenda. Now, Splenda is basically the sugar molecule where they took oxygen and hydrogen atoms off and put chlorine atoms on instead. And you think, gosh, chlorine, it's toxic. You know, chlorine gas is deadly. But think of sodium chloride is table salt. It's one of the most, you know, easy to get along with substances out there. And so that is the theory behind Splenda. And the thing about Splenda is it can't be metabolized like sugar. So you just, it just goes through your system.
Cool.
So there you go. So if you're worried about one, you can try the other one.
All right.
Okay, cool, man.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We have a question here from one of our listeners, a little more weird medicine-y. Go, John.
Dear Dr. Steve, I've heard of dingleberries, but I'm not sure what they are. This sounded like a question right up your alley, so to speak, so I thought I'd send you an email.
Okay, cool. Now, this person must not have a hairy ass crack, and we've talked about this on our show on multiple occasions. We discussed bidets on the last show, why the French don't have
toilet paper.
They don't have rectal problems like we do. And again, just to refresh everyone's memory, wiping with dry paper is like trying to wipe grease off a dog's back if you've got a hairy butt. And toilet paper tends to shred, and basically dingleberries are just bits of toilet paper bound up with semi-liquid fecal matter. It's just lovely.
Have you heard of the John Wayne toilet paper?
No.
Rough and tough and don't take shitting off nobody.
Well, that's pretty good there, John.
I thought it was
that's
funny.
That's P.A. John, everybody.
I like that, John.
You know, the best solution for dingleberries is to wash with water after crapping. But this is one of the things I thought. We're going to do I was talking to a friend, Doug from Boston, and I talked to him on Gmail. I've seen him on Pal Talk a couple of times. And we were talking about this, and I said the three things I could think of are waxing, shaving, or using Nair. And he said, I've tried two of those, and I recommend waxing. Okay. Now, who here has a hairy ass crack?
I got one.
I've already said that when I did my colonoscopy, that's my image. Because I did it without anesthesia, I've just got this image of my disgusting ass, you know, on this big giant TV screen when they were just getting ready to insert the tube. And I was just horrified because it's not a place that you can just look at.
Right.
You know? So we need one person here to shave their ass crack. We need one to get their ass crack waxed. And then one, if anybody's got the balls to do it, to try Nair. And then, we'll record the outcome and report next time. Now, I am willing to do the wax job.
Oh my God.
Well, I'll shave before I Nair.
Okay.
I'll shave for you, but I'm not Nairing anything.
Okay. You going to Nair? Rob, what about you?
I can Nair.
You going to Nair?
But
John?
How close to your...
I don't know.
Just Nair what you can?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess.
Yeah, dude. I mean, dude, I don't know.
It goes from the very... Well, I wouldn't say top of my head because the top of my head's almost bald, but from close to the back of my head all the way down to my... ankles.
Yeah.
I have hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's awful.
So we're going to get the perineum and the ass crack, or you just want the ass crack?
No, I just think because we're worried about dingleberries and wiping and all that stuff that we're going to try and just
who's
going to
be the quote referee?
Well, there won't be one. We'll just come back and report our findings.
Honor system.
Yeah. And I'll record my waxing.
Wow.
Oh, God.
So, all right. So it's the hairy ass crack challenge. If anyone has recommendations on that, or if you have any comments or questions, or if you've got any stories to tell, email us at drsteve202@gmail.com or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. You're listening to Weird Medicine, and we've got we've better get to some other questions here. We've got one from the Brooklyn Blowhard that was left on our voicemail, and here he is. Here's Blowhard.
Hello, Dr. Steve and P.A. John. This is the Blowhard calling from Brooklyn, USA, and I got a dirty, perverted sexual question for you. Every time my girlfriend puts a tongue in my ear, I get a major woody. Now, that's not strange, but what's strange is, as she's going down on me, the more I pump my left arm, and only my left arm, the better the feeling gets as she's doing me. It's almost like I'm milking a cow with my arm, and if I punch down on the bed as I'm about to climax, it gets better and better and better. Now, I know there's erogenous zones, but I also worry that the left side of my body is alive, and I'm a stroke victim, and the right part of my body is dead. Is there something wrong with this? God. I understand all about erogenous zones, like I said, but it's just bizarre how my left arm can make my orgasm feel so much better. God, I feel dirty asking this question. Thanks, guys.
We feel dirty listening to it.
Well, I mean, first, we have a mission statement, and people may not know that, but we do have one. And our mission statement says, we'll never make someone sorry that they asked us a medical question, okay. But we may have to make an example or an exception for this one. The image of Blowhard, which he's a pretty big dude. 400-pound Norwegian pumping that left arm up and down while his chick is filleting him is just an image I will never get out of my head. Now, could he harness that energy and, say, churn butter or something? Honey, thanks for the head, and would you like a dairy spread for your French toast? I don't know.
Well, we've all got to be thinking conservation.
That's right. I'm just
trying to
just talking about being efficient. I think, you know, everyone has their own routine for achieving an orgasm. I mean, Jim Norton flicks his own meaty nipples, and double vasectomy Todd pulls on his awful piercings.
Oh, dude.
And
I'm outed.
There's a lot of neural energy released during an orgasm, and Blowhard is simply releasing it by beating the bed with his left arm. And Todd, you had a great theory on that too.
Since he said it was only his left arm, my question is, does it have anything to do with right brain, left brain? Maybe he's getting some stimulation in his cortex that is not physical; it's just more mental.
Sure, and the right brain is silent and may vary. The right brain is artistic and sensitive and is mute, can't speak.
Right.
So, and that's something we ought to talk about sometime, because people are probably going, what the hell is he talking about? Right brain, left brain stuff is fascinating, because you actually have two separate brains in your head that are separate, you know, that are joined by a little cable between the two. And those two brains are very, very different, and they're at war a lot. And I think one of the times that they come together is during orgasm.
I think it would be a neat test to ask him to drive down the highway and put his left arm out the window and just catch the air. And as it goes up and down, to see if he could bring himself to orgasm.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, you know, as long as he beats inanimate objects with it, it's cool. It's just part of the natural variation of life. And I'm guessing that he beats he's using his left hand to beat the bed because he normally masturbates with his right hand. I'm just guessing that's what it is.
Jealousy.
All right. We've got another question from our voicemail line. And this is Dan in Tennessee.
Dr. Steve, this is Dan from Tennessee. I need to know what a nymphomaniac is, and I'd also like to know where I can find one.
Good man. Nymphomania is one of those things that's a myth that everybody knows about, but is really it's a myth. It was first laid out by the French physician Bienville in 1771, and his paper is really got a great title. It's Nymphomania, or a dissertation concerning the furor uterinus.
Wow.
So angry uterus. Right? So, he thought that it was caused by dwelling on impure thoughts, reading novels, and eating too much chocolate, and what he called secret pollutions, which we can only translate as masturbation.
Wow.
So,
why is it this stuff's always leveled on women?
I know.
Women should not, if you read and eat chocolate.
Well, because the physicians back then were men, and they
right,
were
right, right,
this,
right, right,
know.
Yeah.
You know, why is there a pill out there to enhance male sexual pleasure but not one for female sexual pleasure? It's because the researchers and the people running those companies are men.
Yeah.
You know?
We're paying for it. We're first.
And women are mysterious, so. Kinsey said a nymphomaniac was any woman that was having more sex than you are.
So, I like it.
Now, some schizophrenics will become hypersexual, but that's not the same thing as a nymphomaniac, and they're psychotic, and it's really not much different than thinking a space lab controls your brain. You know,
right?
And it was used, the term nymphomania was used to excuse rape in a lot of court cases in the past, where they would say, you know, she was a nymphomaniac, so she was asking for it. Yeah. Kinsey found that there was natural variation in sexual activity in humans, and that you could never find a level above which you should not go. You know, where you said, okay, if you have sex this many times a month, you're a nymphomaniac, but below that, you're quote-unquote normal.
And, good to know.
And Freud thought nymphomania came from anorgasmia, where anorgasmia is an inability to achieve orgasm at all. And he thought that a woman unable to have orgasms during sex would attempt to find satisfaction through multiple partners, and that's mm-hmm. where it came from. That's not an unreasonable thought.
No.
But it's not nymphomania. Psychiatrists don't even recognize nymphomania as a disorder anymore. But they do have a disorder that is basically translated as having sex and worrying that you're a nymphomaniac. You know, if you have sex more than you think you should, and oh gosh, am I a nymphomaniac? There is a syndrome of that, but not of nymphomania per se. I had a girlfriend in high school that had this alcohol psychosis syndrome, and she would become grossly hypersexual when she had one drink. The rest of the time, just normal, nice, wonderful, sweet person, and one drink of alcohol, she became this harpy. Oh, it was unbelievable.
Man.
Yeah. No, and it wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't cool.
Why'd you break
up? Wasn't
a
good thing.
Yeah, it wasn't cool. It wasn't cool at all. It was just, it was bizarre. And, anyway.
Jill and I went to a sex addicts meeting one time.
Really?
In school when we were in PA school.
Because you thought you had a problem or?
No. We had to pick a group to go to, so it was either Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever, and so
okay.
we chose Sex Addicts.
Excellent.
And the Alcoholics Anonymous are pretty welcoming to people that aren't even alcoholics, so
yeah.
they'll let anybody. But we were thinking that the Sex Addicts wouldn't allow us to just come in and watch them.
Yeah,
and so
reasonable.
We said, well, we're going to have to just make up something, and so we presented ourselves as, we think we're just having sex way too much. It's affecting our lives. We're supposed to be places with family and friends, and we can't make it there. We end up canceling things, and we think that we really have a problem. And two men showed up to the meeting, and that was it. I was sitting there the entire time thinking, these guys are jacking under the table. Looking at Jill.
Yeah. Well, you know,
she is rather attractive.
Yeah, your wife is very attractive without being over the line or overboard. And I got to say, taking her to a sex addicts meeting is like going to an AA meeting with a six pack.
No.
Now, those poor guys went there for help, and what do? But here's my beautiful wife, and you can't have her.
Right.
And we're banging all the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, dude.
No, I want to say, you know, but listening to them talk and hearing their problems, I was thinking, oh my gosh, wow. Because it really affected their lives as far as business, spending lots of money on prostitution and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was more of a real problem, not just having a lot of sex with the person you really want to screw. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's uncontrollable.
Yeah, so we, you know, it was interesting to hear all of it. But
so sexual addiction among women – still isn't – nymphomania still doesn't exist, but there is sexual addiction in women.
Right. And, you know, the I hear that the psychiatrists are getting ready to throw out the whole sex addict thing too.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's some political stuff involved there where if men are sex addicts, somehow they can be president. But if women are sex addicts, there's something wrong with them. And so there's
– they're whores. She's a witch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a disparity there. So they're working on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
All right. That's what it was in the 1100s,
hey,
dude.
This is Amy. I'm just curious. I need you to settle a bet for me. How many women actually have an orgasm from just intercourse alone? Most of my friends don't. Let me know what you think.
Okay. Well, that's a great question, and it's a good follow-up to the last one is female orgasm. You know, why do so many women have problems during intercourse? So let's get everybody kind of on the same page as far as female anatomy. The female pleasurable sex organ is the clitoris. Okay, it has erectile tissue and lots of nerve endings, and it is the embryologically, in other words, in the womb and developmentally the same or analogous to the penis in the male. Okay, okay. And then the labia, which are on the side of the entrance of the vagina, are embryologically similar to the scrotum. Okay, and they're attached at one end to the hood of the clitoris. So the vagina itself has very few nerve endings in it. And anyone who's ever had a pap smear or had a, let's say, an endometrial cell sampling will know that, because they can take a clamp and go in and clamp the cervix with this clamp that's just got two needles basically that go pierce the tissue then hold it. And women, for the most part, if they feel anything, feel a little bit of tugging or some pressure. Women's orgasms are clitoral, not vaginal. Now Freud, we're getting back to Freud again, he had this whole idea that female orgasms were either vaginal or clitoral, and that the orgasm that came from the clitoris was adolescent, and then the more mature women had vaginal orgasms. There's absolutely no evidence for this. And penis in vagina is the best way for a male to achieve proper friction for a male orgasm. It's not the best way for a woman necessarily. And direct clitoral stimulation is the best. And 75% of women, so Amy, who called in, is correct. Most of her friends don't have regular penis in vagina orgasm. 75% of women do not achieve orgasm through intercourse. And 12% never have an orgasm.
Ever.
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 So, the causes are lack of clitoral stimulation, distraction, anxiety about having an orgasm, and you don't have one, and then, oh, God, now I'm not having one, so you're thinking about other things, and fear of loss of control.
My thought, mm-hmm. and I would probably speak for a majority of men out there, who cares?
I knew that was coming.
I got mine, get yours.
Yeah. Well, for women, and Susie, I wouldn't mind, we've got about 3 minutes left. I'd like mm-hmm. to get some of your thoughts on this. For women to have orgasm, if they're having trouble with it, breathe deeply or pant to distract yourself, arch your back or try to get in a different position to maximize clitoral stimulation, rhythmically squeeze the pelvic floor muscles, Kegel exercises, you can do those, and that will help. Or escape into your favorite fantasy. And, if all else fails, a trip to the local sex shop or AdamEve.com is in order. And if you just have to have an orgasm with a penis in your vagina, have your partner put on a vibrating cock ring.
Yeah.
That will achieve, if you put the vibrating part on the top, you'll achieve clitoral stimulation, and it's mm-hmm. pretty intense. What do you think about all this stuff? I mean, here we are, a bunch of men talking about female orgasms, and we got a female here, so...
Actually, I agree with you, because a lot of guys don't understand that, which yep. seems to be a general problem. See, yeah. I happen to be in the lucky, happy 25% that's okay, okay with that,
yeah.
but it is a lot better.
Yeah,
so.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's a source of stress for the male and the female,
Could be.
And, the guy's going, gosh, how come I can't make her come just by having sex?
Yeah.
And for the woman, it's like, is there something wrong with me? But no, there's not. If you're having orgasms during just regular penis-vagina intercourse, you're in the minority, and I would think maybe the lucky minority.
Hmm. You think I can get a better stimulus package from that?
You're not the one who needs a better stimulus package, John. It's your wife.
Yeah, that's right.
She gets a pretty good stimulus package, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't really know what you mean.
Okay, yeah,
I'm lost.
Okay, we've got about a minute 30 left. Let's just do this question real quick. Dear Dr. Steve, I'm on Cymbalta for depression, and I feel great. The good news is my libido is intact, meaning his sex drive, but I can't complete the transaction. If I jack off, it takes 3 times as long as before, and my wife just gets bored before I can bust a nut. What can I do about this? The Cymbalta helps me in every other way. Well, Cymbalta is an antidepressant, one of the new class of antidepressants that works on two brain chemicals, which is norepinephrine and serotonin. The first batch, Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft, only worked on the serotonin. Don't worry about that. It's just different chemicals in the brain. And they had a lot of sexual side effects, including loss of sex drive and delayed orgasm for men and women. The new batches, which are Effexor and batches, so to speak, Effexor and Cymbalta, don't seem to mess with this desire, but the pinnacle, in other words, achieving an orgasm, is still hard to reach. Now, the manufacturer will say sexual dysfunction is seen in less than 5% of people overall. And I'm just going to give this person one answer, and it is to schedule sex nights. And if you do, and if it's okay with your healthcare provider, skip the Cymbalta that day. And it has that part of the molecule has a short enough half-life that you probably will be able to complete the transaction. But make sure you check with your person. Okay. Well, this hour has vanished like a chunk of vas deferens down a urologist's sink. I want to personally thank Ron and Fez for their continuing support, and thanks to O&A and especially Eric Nagel for giving us the spot, and pray that the marketing gods at Sirius XM Radio see the benefit of having a medical show on XM 202, yes. Sirius 197. We really appreciate Tom Kane for keeping us in audio. It's like having our own audio clipping service. And also my niece Holly, who was a ballet dancer and danced with Baryshnikov and is now smoking cigarettes and following some guitar player around in Western Florida. Yes, moms, that's what you can expect from putting your little girls through ballet school. thanks to Double Vasectomy Todd, or we could call him Vaz Squared, for being there when we need someone. And eat it to Jefferson the lawyer, who couldn't get off his ass and make it here on time today, preferring instead to spend time with his huge-breasted wife on a romantic escapade in Atlanta. Well, thinking about it, I guess we're the fruity ones. A bunch of men sweating in a little room talking about penises for an hour. For P.A. John and me, and Double Vasectomy Todd, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in another month for the next edition of Weird Medicine.